Welcome to another episode of What Else You Got with Mitch and Margo. I'm Mitch. I'm with Margo. And Margo, what else you got for today?
Oh, I have got a topic for you today. You know, in a previous episode of our podcast, we talked about job interviews and hiring or not hiring people. But so here's a question. Do you purchase products or do you hire products?
Well, the average American says, I purchase products.
So this might provide a little bit of a mind shift for you, because when we think about hiring a person to do a job, typically the person is hired to do a specific list of essential job duties, whatever that particular job is. And if that person cannot fulfill those essential job duties, well, then they're let go. They're dismissed. They're exited out. So if you think in terms of the products you have purchased, if you purchase a product, you're purchasing it for a specific reason. But then if you have hoarding tendencies or pack rat tendencies, those products could pile up around your house. So if you change your shift in thinking, well, that didn't make any sense. If you shift your thinking into hiring a product to do a specific job. So I did not come prepared with examples. How about a stapler? You purchase a stapler, you hire the stapler to do a specific job, to put staples through paper. If the stapler fails, if the stapler stops stapling, well, first of all, check to see if it needs more staples. But if it is no longer serving its purpose, it's no longer fulfilling its essential job duties, why would you keep it on site? If it's broken and no longer works, let it go. So if you're hiring a product to fulfill a specific job duty, does it serve a purpose if it's no longer fulfilling that duty?
Yep. And that's actually a really great topic. So I suffer from the I need another tool syndrome. This is very common for DIYers and basically any, actually just about anything. Because literally yesterday, my mother-in-law said that you seem to have a gadget for everything. I'm going, well, when you come across enough things, you tend to collect the tools that you need for something. Because in this, one of the better examples that I can think of off the top of my head is a circular saw. It is a universal tool that can do just about anything with wood, and it can do phenomenal stuff. But a better tool to do a little bit more detailed work that can give you more repeatable cuts that is easy to work with is a table saw. What's the difference? Technically, almost nothing. If you really look at it's a saw that spins and you do stuff. Circular saw, you push it over the material. Table saw, you push the material over it. But it's one of those that if you're looking at the pure job of cutting material, they do the same thing. But the table saw alleviates some of the difficulties that come from it, which is repeatable measurements, stability, safety, and a couple other things. And it really comes down to, yes, they do the same job, but they do it in a different way. I feel like I'm repeating myself. And it's just one of those that one of the things that I look at when I am looking at a tool is, do I have something that can do it? And then what is the difficulty of not having the best tool for it? And another example, a couple years ago, I was building a table. And the tool I wanted to use wouldn't get to me for a couple of days. And so I approached it differently, where I did dowel joints by hand. And the problem with dowel joints is you get all wonky angles unless you're able to perfectly align things. But what I wanted to use was a biscuit joiner that just can perfectly line them up every single time. And so I could do it with a lesser tool, but the better tool would have been better.
Well, and if we're thinking about hiring products instead of purchasing them, we could also compare it in a way of forming a team also. So if we're hiring employees, we want a team to function efficiently. And if you give one team member too many responsibilities, that team member could get overwhelmed and break down, right? And you could compare that metaphorically to the example of your tools. So on one hand, someone could argue, you have too many tools. On the other hand, you could argue, no, I have a team of tools, because this way, not one tool is overworked to the point that it breaks. And you have defined the scope of each tool to work efficiently and effectively for its particular responsibility. So I hear you saying you've built a team of tools to all work efficiently for their specific responsibility.
Yep. And as you said that, I thought of another phenomenal example that someone explained nicely in a video of. So a lot of people have a drill that they can drill holes with, that they can drive screws with. And some people have a drill and an impact driver, and an impact driver can technically drill holes and screw things in, but the drill does better drilling holes. The impact driver does better screwing in things. And the reason why you use both of them at the same time is so you don't have to keep swapping the drill bit to get the screwdriver out. And so you have one that has one tool configuration, one that has another tool configuration, and you rotate the tools so that you can do twice as much work in half as much time.
That's a great example. What if you hire a product to fulfill an emotional need?
Ooh. I think you just described hobbies.
Oh, for a second, I thought you said, I think you just described Haagen-Dazs.
Oh, there's that too. That is a very specific job. Actually, as I'm looking around, I have a tub of ice cream that I forgot to throw away when I was done with it.
I was just going to say, you have a tub of ice cream sitting there melting next to you as we're talking. What are you doing?
Yeah, I finished off last night and I hadn't taken the spoon back yet.
That's funny. So what if you hire a product to fulfill an emotional purpose?
Yeah, there's a bunch of different ways. And the video you sent me on this topic that I saw just before getting here is a lady was talking about how a pair of pants make her feel cute. And it's just one of those how you go, cool, makes you feel cute. Once it doesn't make you feel cute, is there a reason to keep it?
Well, and I think that's where you could either overthink it, or you could be either a hoarder or you could be a minimalist. Because if those pair of pants no longer make you feel cute, are they a pair of pants you can work out in the garden in, or mow the lawn? Mm-hmm. So give it a new purpose, or purge it and let it go.
Yeah. And I really like the idea of repurposing things, because sometimes something in one configuration doesn't quite work, but if you change its configuration, it can work differently. Because I know a lot of people, a t-shirt either has a couple of stains, a couple of holes, doesn't quite work. And a lot of people turn those into rags because they're able to then become cleaning. And then once those aren't good, then it becomes something to fuel your fire with. So it just comes down to different ways to use stuff.
Well, and this topic is literal. However, it's also developing into a bit of a metaphor also, because what you just described would also apply to a team at work also. If you've hired a person to fulfill a specific role and you're discovering that they're struggling to fulfill that role, you could just fire that person, or you could stop and ask yourself, wait a second, could there be some repurposing here? If this person's strengths are A, B, and C, maybe they could be repurposed in another role where they could end up shining and excelling in a different role where they were failing in their current role. So I was speaking quite literally when I brought this topic up, but I'm seeing there's a lot of metaphor embedded.
Well, just going off the parallel. So I end up 3D printing because I got a 3D printer. One of the best tools that can do just about anything, or at least make tools for other things. And one of the tools that I used the 3D printer to make was a yarn winder. It's just one of those things that it circles around and it just makes a nice ball of yarn. And it was doing quite well. It had a couple of hiccups where a couple of screws were loose, but that's what you get for a 3D printed thing. And it absolutely failed in one aspect. It was squeaky. And, oh, it was super loud. Didn't bother me, bothered my wife. But so it was one of those that, because one of my philosophies of at what point do you replace or upgrade something? It's when the thing no longer fulfills its task. You are using it to a degree that it is now an inconvenience to accomplish the task, or you completely smoked the current one you have and it's time to go up a tier. Because that one yarn winder, it was super squeaky and I realized I'm using it enough. So I went and bought a different one, and I bought a professional one that actually does a good job. And a couple of years ago, I had this one drill. Actually, I think it was a drill. Might have been an impact driver. And I was using it. And one day, I'm pushing it, and I get white smoke come out. And I go, oh, I used that one till it died. And at that point, I realized I'm using this tool enough where I can go up to the next tier, and I can get what is considered a professional-grade tool versus a hobbyist tool because I use it enough. And yes, it costs like four times more, but I have graduated from using a home user tool to what I can now justify using a better quality tool.
Okay, you said a lot of great things in that. First of all, I want to reiterate one of the things you said was your 3D printed tool was squeaky and it has some screws loose. So I just wanted to reemphasize that sometimes, yes, again, metaphor, when I have a few screws loose, I too am squeaky. I just thought that was pretty funny. But then also, your description reminded me of an old adage of use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without. And I don't agree with that adage 100%, but that's kind of what you described. Use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without. And then also when you're talking about upgrading to the higher quality tool, coming from a sales background, I actually use that concept to always sell a higher quality product that was much more expensive because, frankly, selfishly, from a sales perspective, I was trying to earn commission, right? But the best salesperson is someone who helps the customer solve a problem. And so that was always the angle I approached sales from, was how can the product I'm trying to sell best solve the problem of this particular person I'm talking to. So like with your example of the quality of drill, if I were trying to sell a product to you, I would explain that yes, you can start with this less expensive model and get by with that for now, but why put out, and I have no idea how much those drills cost, so I'm just going to throw some numbers out. Why spend $50 now on a product that will get you by for a short while when you could spend $200 and have a higher quality, more effective, more efficient product that will last you at least 15 years? And so while that's what I would do from a sales perspective, from a consumer perspective, I would probably ask myself some questions. Am I going to use this drill for the next 15 years? Or am I not even sure if I am going to enjoy this hobby? Then I might start with the less expensive one first.
Mm-hmm. And so Adam Savage from Mythbusters has a really cool idea. And I'm going to paraphrase because I don't remember the exact phrasing. But buy the cheapest tool you can find that can do the job. And when it breaks, because you've used it enough, that's one, says you're actually using it. Two, it says you know what you're actually looking for now. And so you can get the correct tool when you upgrade it. Because otherwise, if you buy the cheapest tool and it just sits on the shelf and you used it half a time, not even the full time because you realize it's the wrong tool. Well, you didn't just spend $5,000 on this tool that didn't quite do the job, or you didn't quite really like it. Instead, you bought the cheapest thing and you tried it out and great. And who knows, sometimes the cheapest tool is the best tool, but it's just one of those that looks funny. And then going back to the sales, one reason why I shouldn't be in sales, I do sell things occasionally, is when someone says, well, why should I upgrade? I'm going, well, for the needs you've described, this absolute minimum is what you can do. And I sell them the absolute minimum. And like you're saying, you can spend something bigger. And then I have the recommend, which is, it's a little bit more expensive than the absolute minimum, but it solves these other problems that you don't realize you will have. And then I also offer the big package of, if you just want to go overboard and get the top tier stuff, this is what you can get. But I generally recommend the center one, but I also say, this is what you're actually asking for, but this is what you need.
See, you have natural salesmanship in your blood, because that is, from a salesperson's perspective, that's actually a great strategy, because you are giving them options and you're making it clear that you're not trying to just go for the top dollar sales commission. You're not being selfish. You're trying to help them solve problems. And so when you can get the consumer to buy in to what you're offering and to trust you a little bit, and your method allows them to buy into the information and gives them the wiggle room to make the choice for themselves, but the way you've tiered it out for them, I wouldn't be surprised if you, as a salesperson, got a lot of people buying that top tier product because you weren't only pushing the top tier product. You explained the effectiveness and efficiency and benefits of each level. And by doing that, then they can see that you are trying to help them solve their specific problem within their specific means. And there's actually even some reverse psychology in there too, of when you tell them that the middle one or even the lower one would satisfy their needs and they don't need to go overboard, as you said, with the top tier, that's when ego kicks in again. And sometimes that consumer will say, well, maybe I do want to go overboard. Maybe I do want the top tier. I can afford the top tier. And they will end up going with the top tier because their ego kicked in. And do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. And the way you describe it, I'm going, sure, I can do sales that way. The only problem is I usually give them I usually sell them the farm. I was only supposed to sell them the tractor. In the sense of, I sell the farm for the tractor price.
Oh, well, that's not good. I thought you meant you were, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, that's why I don't work sales, is I get too many leeways.
Because you're generous, you've got a big heart, and you just want to take care of people. So I see what you're saying there. Yeah, yeah. I'm glad. Well, I was about to say I'm glad I'm not in sales anymore. But to be honest with you, every person is a salesperson every single day of their lives, because either I'm convincing you to do or think something, or you're convincing me. Pretty much every single conversation in our daily lives is an exchange between salesperson and buyer. It's just you're choosing in each conversation which role you're going to be. And so I know a lot of people don't want to be considered a salesperson because there's the tarnished idea of the used car salesperson persona. But the fact of the matter is, we are exchanging every single day in every conversation. Either I'm the salesperson or I'm the buyer.
Yep. In so many different ways. So I'm going to shift us to a slightly adjacent topic of hiring a tool to do a job. So at what point do you dismiss an item?
Yes, exactly. Because unless we all want to become hoarders, and I find it hard to even say this, as your background is a bookcase full of gadgets and my background is a bookcase full of crafting supplies. So we both are sitting amidst our different items that we have hired to serve a purpose. I think that there needs to be a self-check, you know? And if you've run out of hangers, don't go buy more hangers. Stop and do a self-check. Why are all of your hangers full? Are all of those pieces of clothing still serving their purpose? And if they're not serving their purpose, why are they still in your closet? And I used to have a rule that I could not buy a new pair of shoes unless I let go of an old pair that was no longer serving its purpose. And so I know a lot of people have that rule of product in, product out. And so if you're bringing something new in, what old item are you going to let go of that's no longer serving its purpose? You know, and Marie Kondo, I think that's her name, said, if something is not sparking joy, why are you keeping it? I don't think everything in your space needs to spark joy. I think that it can serve a purpose. And so...
Yeah, trash bags don't bring joy, but I still need them.
What did you say doesn't bring joy?
Trash bags.
Trash bags. Well, you could argue and say that it does bring joy because it's taking the trash out of your house.
But by itself, it does not qualify as bringing joy.
Yeah. So my general... Those are my two general rules. Is this item... No, three rules. Is it serving a purpose? Is it sparking some sort of joy? And then the other concept of item in, item out.
So I'll add a fourth one on top of the, is it serving a purpose? Is that purpose still being, is that purpose still needed? So yeah, you might buy an apple slicer, but if you for some reason never eat apples anymore, then yes, it's still serving a purpose of it can slice apples, but the need for it is now gone.
Correct. I agree. And I don't think that the purpose has to be an immediate purpose. I think it is okay if you have a friend that comes over twice a year and they love to have that apple slicer for their apples when they come over. So if you have space to store that apple slicer to accommodate your friend twice a year, I think that's okay to keep it. But if you don't have the space and it's that infrequent, then it might serve you better to let it go.
And right along with that, one of the thoughts I have when I'm getting rid of things is, will I need to buy this again in a year?
Yes.
If it's a yes, then the next question is, do I have somewhere I can stick it? If the answer is yes, I then ask the, is it something I really need to keep? Which sometimes it varies between, is this inexpensive enough or is this something that there's other value besides the face value of it?
And TMI, I have, as people know, I go to weekly therapy and working to improve myself. One of the things I work on in therapy is my relationship with food. And as I was losing some weight, I said to my therapist, I said, I have packed up my clothes that are too big and I've put them on a shelf in my closet. And she said, why are you keeping them? And I said, because inevitably, whenever I get rid of the larger clothes, then I regain the weight and I have to go buy bigger clothes. But if I hold on to the larger clothes, then I'm able to maintain my weight and not need the larger clothes, which I know is, you know, it, when there are screws loose, it becomes a little squeaky, right? But so she looked at me, she actually leaned forward and she said, are you broke? And I said, no. And she didn't mean squeaky, screws loose. She meant financially. She said, can you not afford to buy clothes if you regain weight? And I said, well, I don't want to have to spend the money again. And she said, Margo, get rid of the clothes. And if you regain the weight, you can go buy new clothes. And I really struggled with that. But she was trying to make the point of, is it about the clothes? Is it about the weight? Or is it about a fear that I won't be able to afford the clothes in the future? And so I think when it comes to purging and letting go of things, we really have to do some self-reflection and ask ourselves, why am I so determined to hold on to this collection of ink pens that are out of ink?
Yeah. And that brings up two thoughts. One is a safety net. Are you keeping it for a safety net to encourage yourself to fail? Or are you keeping it because, like you said, you won't be able to incur the expense of repurchasing it? So it's just one of those that, do you need the safety net or can you get rid of the safety net?
And both of those are fear-based.
Yep. And then adjacent to it is one of those that I have a storage unit, which there's a lot of reasons why I have a storage unit. And I have a large amount of tools in there because I've since moved and I haven't been able to get them fully brought into where I'm currently staying. But it's also one of those that I'm currently paying $100 a month. And then I look at the items in that storage unit and I go, do I want to pay for all these items four times and keep them in the storage unit? Or do I sell them and repurchase them at a later time at cost? And it's one of those that, yes, a storage unit gets to keep stuff, but you're paying for all those items again, depending on how long they stay in storage.
Valid. Now, where I live, because I live in an apartment and I pay extra per month for a small garage, which I use as a storage unit. So to your point, yes, some of the things that are in boxes, I should apply your logic to, but I also have two kayaks and a paddleboard in there. Mm-hmm. And so regardless, I would need somewhere to store my kayaks and paddleboard. So the expense of the garage is serving a different purpose than just to keep my excess items in.
Yeah. And to your point, there is a reason for the additional space, but if your reason is to store items to keep that you may or may not ever get to using, or the value you pour into keeping them exceeds their base value, then why is it there? It's just one of those that I know people that have these insane storage units because they can't get rid of a pair of shoes that they wore when they were two.
Right. And to that, if you're keeping things for sentimental reasons, I always like to argue or suggest, take a picture of it. If you're keeping those shoes because they hold sentimental value, take a picture of it. And then you can look at that picture whenever you want to. And so I think thinking about the things that are in our space and why those things are in our space is time well spent. Because why do you have so many things? What purpose are they serving? Did you hire these products to serve a purpose? Are they still serving the purpose? And why are you keeping so many things? I mean, we are a consumer-based society. We have champagne problems, and we all have too many things in this country.
So one of the methods that I saw recently to help encourage what items to keep and what items to get rid of, and it's a really weird concept, but it's a very simple one, is the poop rule. And who knows? It could be an acronym for something. But in reality, it's not. But it's one of those that if the item got poop on it, would you take the time to clean it or would you just throw it away? And if it's one of those that you would take time to clean it, it's probably worth keeping. If it's not worth cleaning, you probably can get rid of it.
Ew.
But as you're thinking through your items, I'm going, quite a few of my tools I would probably clean because, one, they're impermeable, which means it's easy to clean them. Or two, the value is high enough where it's worth cleaning them to keep it. Or it has a high enough sentimental value where it's worth the pain of refurbishing it.
Okay, so here's the example that I will that I can apply your test to. When years ago, when I had little kids at home, two little boys shared a room, and silly me, I thought those two little toddlers in their diapers were taking a nap. First rule that any parent should know is if it's too quiet, there's a problem. And so when I went and checked on them, they had both pooped and they had both removed their diapers and they had both painted the walls, painted the crib, painted the bed, painted the sheets, painted their bodies, painted everything with poop. And it was so disgusting. And I stood there and I probably wondered, is that crib valuable enough to keep? Because to your point, it had poop all over it. Yeah, we took the crib out to the backyard and we hosed it off, cleaned it off, soap and water, hosed it down. So yes. And those two little boys, they were worth enough to also hose them off, clean them up, and keep them. So yeah, the majority, yeah, I think 99% of everything in that room we kept, including those cute two little boys that had poop all over them. So,
and yes, it's an abstract idea, but it really comes down to kind of like what you're saying. Does it bring you joy? And is it something that you must keep, the physical item, or is it something we can move on with? And there's just so many strategies on how to remove the clutter from your life.
Yes.
But it also goes back to, is it something you use regularly? Is it something that it holds enough value where it's worth keeping? There are so many ways to evaluate what to keep and what to get rid of, and whether or not they still hold value, whether it's doing its job, whether it's creating income for you. There are so many ways to evaluate stuff, and it really just comes down to, why do you have it?
Yep. All right. That was a good conversation. And I'm ending it with a smile on my face. I hope everybody can reconsider the things and items in their surroundings and consider, why is that in my space? And hey, feel free to leave a comment. Click like, bookmark us, do all the things. And we'll see you for the next episode of What Else You Got with Mitch and Margot.